Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Coffee Cast with Cation and Rubin, powered by Behind the Racket, the podcast dedicated to looking at the top issues facing tennis and getting to know the players facing them.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. The Coffee Cast can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
Special thanks to our sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at newbalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com. And now,
a real treat for us here as we get ready for the start of the main draw of the Australian Open, of which Noah Rubin will not be a part.
It's normal. Nah, don't worry about it.
Lest we forget the Roger Federer match.
Oh, God.
Noah Rubin's still riding that wave.
Okay.
We have to start this for a second because people don't know. I don't think.
Can you introduce her?
Yeah. People just don't understand, I think, because how close Christy and I are. I mean, between.
Near-death experiences. We've been to hell and back multiple times.
And hell for us was at the time was Tasmania. It was at the end of a very long trip. And we actually really enjoyed Tasmania. Beautiful country. People were super nice. But we were exhausted. Here, Mitchell Krueger and I are battling, human-sized spiders.
And apparently Tasmanian devils.
That is still up for discussion right now. And oh my God, do you know how we, remember we packed the car?
Yes.
So we are in what we thought was an SUV at the time, turned out to not be. And we have four people, Jamie, Loeb, Mitchell Krueger, Christy, and I. And we have all three bags on top of us. And I'm the only person that could see literally out the car.
Is driving?
No, I'm driving.
You're driving, right. Not to mention like four of the most American people who don't know how to drive on the other side of the road.
So just a little quick backstory. It's a two-lane traffic, one lane each side, but we're on this truck that's going super slow, and then every once in a while they have this lane where you can go around.
Yeah.
So they make it two, it becomes three lanes. And I'm nervous. I'm like, I don't think I have enough time. I see, like, in the far, far distance of truck, I'm like, I don't have enough time. Here I am getting name-called by people saying.
No, Mitchell
screaming, like, you have to go right now.
Yeah.
Go.
Like, screaming at him.
Finally, I dart it.
Floor it. I'm screaming continuously in the back seat.
I feel like I'm in a Fast and Furious movie. I'm, like, touching the truck on both sides of me. And we literally, I mean, obviously, it's hyperbole at this point, but I saw everything. I saw my life flash before my eyes, and it was with
not
these
a lot
three
of
others.
Though.
No, zero highlights.
Yeah,
honestly, it was the same day over and over again.
I just love that we jumped straight into this. That's the best part. There's no introduction. There's no nothing. It's just we're going to rub Noah's face right in the dirt and share a story.
Honestly, that's how a lot of these have started. But I just want people to know how close we are. I think we have the same mentality with a lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
We get along very well. We're extremely sarcastic, and we both like making fun of Noah. So that works out extremely well.
I think people have to know that.
But again, we're excited to have you. Obviously, congratulations on all your recent success. Debut top 100 last year. It is insane as you're continuously making fun of me. I am still very happy for you. I am. I mean, so how's it feel? How's it feel to... You know, top 100 is like that first goal everybody thinks about. How does it feel to actually get there?
It actually doesn't feel any different. Obviously, like, being main draw of slams, your bank account says otherwise. But, it just feels like, okay, I've crossed this hurdle. Now I have the next one of, one, continuing to stay in top 100, and then two, hopefully, you know, making it next to top 50, whatever, top 75, and it gets tougher. So you feel like you're like at the top of your game, and all of a sudden it just feels like you're like playing a video game where you're like, yeah, I beat the level, and then you're like next level, and then it's like final boss, and you're like, oh.
So how do you enjoy it though? I mean, you have to have some things that you've been able to enjoy, maybe that you didn't get to enjoy, say, 2 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know. The weird thing is, it just feels like everything's been the same. Like, you know, earlier last year, I was playing 25s, challengers regularly. Like, so this is all very new to me. I'm trying to keep the same mentality, not put too much pressure on myself, and just kind of focus on my game and growing my process, because that's when I feel like everyone plays their best tennis, and you stop focusing on. I'm losing X amount of points this week. Like, I gotta step it up, because that's when you don't. Shocker. Yeah, so I just feel like I'm trying to keep that growth mentality open, and like, you know, this is in outside the world of tennis, like how cool I get to play in the main draw of Australian Open. So just keeping that in perspective as well.
Okay, but obviously what happened at the US Open, as you mentioned, it does change the bank account a little bit. I imagine there had to be some level of some sort of splurge, like just a little bit. I mean, I'm not talking like crazy, but something, right?
I put my money in a CD account.
Oh my God. Oh, like, that is so Stanford. Like, that's so Stanford of you.
I really could have answered that for you, and that's what's so disappointing. I mean, at least fake it. At least say something.
I couldn't even tell you.
Nothing.
Like a trip? Did you?
No.
A bracelet?
Wow. No, I don't know.
I mean, you
didn't
have,
get me anything?
I bought arm sleeves.
Yeah, you have an arm sleeve as opposed to like 18 band-aids that were like taping things together.
I'm truly disappointed.
No, I'm seriously having to think about it. Because you know what? Like, let me tell you, that money goes fast. Mm. I'm sure no one knows himself.
No, he's actually never been that far.
But he got the life experience of playing Roger Federer.
He did.
Yeah.
He actually just passed.
We haven't all gotten that. Did he wave to you?
What?
Did you guys have a moment?
Who's me?
The glasses throw him
off.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like I'm not one to... I feel like genuinely I'm very happy with my life. And I mean, like, cool. We go to... I spend my money on food, probably.
There's rainy days, so I mean, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I've had many rainy days before, so, like, just catching up on... My dad's an accountant, so he's just like, well, this tax is gone, this tax is gone.
You're broke.
You were at a loss this year, we're making up for that, so...
You're like, when do I get to smile?
I know.
It's something, though, that I mean... Noah and I have talked about it quite a bit, just that idea of finding enjoyment, finding happiness within the sport, and that's really the key. And are you doing that more, less?
I travel with a guitar.
Yeah.
But normally, I didn't bring it on this trip because I had way too many Christmas presents that I brought over for people, so I had to bring an extra piece of luggage. And I'm finding it's a lot of empty time, and I'm kind of regretting it. But yeah, for me, it's, you know, hanging out with my friends, and then giving myself time to just like read a book, play guitar, just be outside of the world of tennis. And yeah,
I mean, and I've spoken about this before, I mean, my high was 125, and at that point I wasn't happier, and I was talking to guys that were 70 in the world, and I was like, when does the happiness come? And I was like, you know, I guess you have to make your own. I think that's really what it comes down to. And you know, what kind of mentality switches do you, like, have a talk with yourself in the mirror to say, okay, I did do something that I've always wanted to do, but things aren't changing that much, so obviously I have to create my own path. I mean, is that a talk that you have to say, things have to improve on my mental side to enjoy it? Because, again, I've spoken to players where they say it doesn't change regardless of the ranking.
Yeah, I guess... I mean, I would probably agree with that, just because you are spending the same amount of weeks. I mean, obviously, you're maybe nicer places, but you don't have time to go around and sightsee. Like, you're exhausted. You go from hotel to site, and you spend a lot of time just either watching Netflix or just, like, bumming. So for me, it's using that time and making it so I actually use it productively or enjoy myself, whatever, music. But yeah, it's a weird, I'm thinking about it as well, and I would say I found New York to be incredibly overwhelming, so I wouldn't.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, no one knows firsthand as well.
I don't want my family in there anymore.
Entire Jewish community comes out for him.
Literally, I try to tell people that I'm playing on a day I'm not playing.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you know, same for me growing up in that area, your entire family rolls out, and it's overwhelming to a point of where it's almost, it deters you from, like, playing your best. But I guess yeah, I don't know, everything, like, I think I did a good job in New York of spending a lot of time by myself and also with my friends and away from the frenzy. And that's kind of, I've been traveling with the guitar for probably 1.5 years now. And the same is, it definitely helps keep me mentally more mellow and less, it puts things in perspective as well, I guess.
I've been singing recently, so maybe we can do something like together. I don't know. We'll talk about that
She's got a regular partner.
Okay. But being in an uncharted territory, you know, not being in top 100 for a long period of time, do you have a team around you? Do you have other players you talk to?
The entourage.
The entourage to navigate those waters, because you say, you know, like, tournament wise and other things like that, you don't know, and I don't know what it would be like to change my schedule fully to more mostly ATP events and stuff like that. Is that, you know, kind of playing it by ear, taking week by week, or what is
it
for you?
Obviously Jay's, you know, my point man, which is he's a boys national coach, so it really doesn't work out. Of course I picked the one guy who he came to the Bronx with me, which was, you know, very far from Queens, and then we spent the 2 weeks in Flushing together, and those were three of the best weeks, just, you know, actually getting to spend time with my coach. That was the most time we've spent together since we started working together, and, like, he gets it. He knows how to deal with, you know, anxiety, pressure, like, and he's just a super relaxed guy. So whenever I start feeling something, I just send him a message, and he's definitely someone I take the advice from. Friends wise, I just try and keep it. I feel like we don't really look for advice. It's just people who, you know, will, you know, who don't talk about tennis all the time, who you can have fun with, who, like, help take your mind actually off of the sport. So I feel like the key to happiness is, like, not tennis.
Yeah.
Anything but tennis. Right. Because you spend your whole day here, you spend your whole life thinking about it. So it's those moments where you can get off tennis that I feel like are the ones that are most productive.
I've had maybe 2 or 3 conversations with you, as opposed to the way too many that I've had with Noah. But it's clear you're a critical thinker.
Double-edged sword.
Yes. How do you avoid that costing you as much as it, I think, does some players?
Yeah, I guess in a terrible way, what I've done much better is I've been able to dumb myself down, which maybe for my human growth isn't great, but for the sport of tennis, it's been great. I focus on 2 things a match, and, like, I literally repeat it. It's like a mantra that
really?
I just chant to myself between every point, during the point. That's what I'm looking for. And then after the point, it's in my head constantly. And it's when I find myself thinking too much, that's when I start freaking out. I'm sure Noah can empathize as well.
Sometimes I just fall asleep on court.
Yeah. Not a thought floating by. Yeah. And then it's weird though, because for me, my brain is on 100 all the time.
Yeah.
So for me, I find myself and I'm like, I just feel, you know, the, like, I think there is some truth to, like, athletes, like, oh, there's the dumb jocks, whatever, and it's like, you probably do play your best when there's less going on in your head, and that's, like, I think there is some truth to that, and that's what I've found when I'm playing my best tennis. I couldn't tell you what I'm, like, it's the same thing. I let my body knows what to do. Like, just try and find a way to put yourself on autopilot.
How'd you get to that point, and please, where did that idea of two?
Yes.
Tell me. Tell me, please.
So, like, I would say in the beginning of the year, I was really struggling with my confidence, and Jay was like, you know what, just keep focusing on these 2 things, literally, like, doesn't matter
beginning
if you...
this year, I'm sorry.
Beginning of 2019. Oh. And he was like, you just stack up the little wins that you can get. Like, you know, I did this well today. I did this well today. And then whether it's mental or physical, like, and then before every point, like, literally I'm telling myself, like, I back myself on this next point. 30 all, but he's like, any big point, just tell it, like, in practice and matches, just repeat to yourself, like, that you, like, believe in your, it was just so corny, but they're, like, yeah. I started to feel it, like, in the big moments. It was less about the pressure or nerves, and it was more about, like, having, like, almost, like, faking the confidence, you know, like, and you kind of almost believe yourself. And then when you do win those points, it's exponential. Yeah.
You know, talking about something that is obviously a topic of discussion, you've talked about it on Twitter a few times, and I do love your tweets, and so does everybody else. Yeah. Now, Mike doesn't talk to an important player such as myself. You are an important player. You're a main draw. You've other players, you know, you guys have played other tournaments and stuff as you're taking a break to cough. There is toxins in the air. There's stuff going on. What is the morale like? What is the mentality, the thought process for main draw players? What are you guys talking about?
Well, first of all, it's not like we're talking like first and second class citizens here. Like, a lot of my friends are still in qualifying. Like, I came here for breakfast yesterday morning, and it was my day off, and she's like, what are you doing here? I'm like, I got breakfast here. She's like, I see you, main draw player, but qualifier mentality. I was like, that's right.
And I know you've been, you know, now you've made your debut and everything, but you know, at times it can feel like there is a separation between the main draw and the qualifying players. That's just, you know, kind of how it is. That's where the money is. That's where people feel the excitement is. So that's why I'm just curious to hear if there is any difference at all.
Well, in regards to the weather, it's pretty much uncharted territory in all forms. Obviously, we play in China, and that's, you know, pretty much the most pollution we ever see, but this is something, it's another animal, it's, you know, fire smoke, bushfire smoke. So I'm on the player council. We had an emergency meeting with Craig Tiley after day one because we were just so concerned. We didn't understand what was going on, and we wanted, you know, we're reading the tweets and messages saying that they're 100% confident that players can go out, that they have experts, and we're like, we don't believe you. And actually, like, meeting with them, it was very interesting because the numbers do say, the numbers online are completely different to the ones on site, which is number one. And number two, something like this has never happened. So there's not really a measure of, though the expertise say, yes, you know, these numbers are playable, they're
taking their best guess.
Every player out there was like, I'm having trouble breathing, focusing, my eyes hurt, which I didn't even think about, that your eyes would hurt from the literal smoke. So it's, and we gave them feedback. We said, we need to do better. We need to treat, you know, not that they were taking it lightly, and I don't envy the position that Craig was in at all. But I think yesterday they definitely, you know, they pushed it back a couple more hours. And apparently when matches went on, the quality of air was much better than it was the day prior. So it's a learning curve for everyone. You know, there's no data on it. There's nothing that they can rely on and fall back on and see, oh, this is what the numbers tell us. There are no numbers. We're starting the numbers now. So hopefully something like this never happens again. But if it does, we know that something like this, we can learn from it and grow from it. And I think that was a bit of a tangent, but just in the locker room, I think there's a lot of anxiety about it because we don't know anything about it. So we really pushed TA to educate us, educate the players as much as they can and let them know, you know, like, because a lot of it is in the psyche as well. You see the smoke and you're like, there's no chance I can play in this. Why am I playing in this? And then turns out actually that the visuals don't quite have a correlation to the air because, like, you know, when you think of a house, when you think of a fire, the smoke rises and they tell you to stay low because the air is actually clearer down there than it is up. So when you look out your window and you're like, I can't see, it's not the same as when you're in I keep saying China, but when you're in Asia and you look out your window and you can't see, you know you won't be able to breathe. So it's a little bit different here, but definitely we're like communication. There's no such thing as over communication at this event right now because everyone's scared and nervous.
That idea of player council and you having such a part of it when you're kind of making that breakthrough is pretty impressive. Do you feel comfortable in that role on the player council?
So in the beginning, I started like US Open right after US Open 2018. And it was so intimidating being, you know, Venus, Vika, Luz Safarova, all these, you know, really, really big names. And obviously Venus has done so much for the women's game in general. Yeah. And you're kind of like, I represent the little people, like nobody cares about us, but I'm going to try. You know, but they were very open to hearing what I had to say. I think I also kind of brought a little bit of a different perspective, kind of going to college and spending time away from tennis and then coming back and kind of being able to see it maybe in a little bit of a different light. And then having this new crew come in with Maddie, Sloan, Gabby, it's weird because I find it bizarre that last year I was, I think, the youngest person on the council at 27 is, or 26 is not. That's not young in the slightest.
Right.
And then this year I'm one of the oldest ones within, you know, maybe Joe's 1 or 2 years older than me. I think Gabby and Alex are, we're all around the same age. But, you know, Donna, Sloan, Maddie, they're all younger and I think it's much more, like, it's been great to see such a dynamic shift and there's so much energy and, like, fresh and it's really cool to see. So now I kind of feel like a veteran.
Yeah.
Everyone's kind of first timers on council as well. So, yeah. It's really cool to see the different personalities and how I feel like everyone's been working really well together.
You know, in a perfect world, if you had one wish right now, if we could change one thing, maybe based on the circumstances we're dealing with, what would you like to see change, whether that's WTA or ATP or tennis in general? What, if you had a wand?
Are we talking about, like, this event, or are we talking about the, like,
in general, because, you know, we've spoken about how
big
players
picture.
Should,
big
you know,
picture.
Cooperate together, yeah.
I mean, honestly, I want to see more combined events. Mm-hmm. I think they make it so, so exciting, and we see, like, those events are the ones that do the best, like for, you know, the ATP and WTA to kind of join hands and be like, we're going to do this together, especially,
yeah.
I think it would be an incredible product to, you know, sell to sponsors and events and everything. And it's one of the few only sports to be able to brag about this, you know, that's something that should be celebrated, not like, we shouldn't be fighting each other and trying to compare and contrast constantly. It's like, guys, this is, you know, obviously with, you know, some older legends kind of on the tail end of their career, it's like, what's going to be next for tennis? Like, we really have to find a way to kind of know what the next step is. And I think the more we can stay together, the stronger it will be.
That's also gives me and you the opportunity to get together at times, as we did in Stockton. And mock.
That's not what
fella.
I had in mind.
Okay.
But
I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Sorry, what you say?
The mocking
little
of the little guy.
You said fella.
Little
you said
fella.
Little fella.
All right, that's fine.
But no, there are definitely times where I've seen
you're
like,
an angry little elf.
She also likes to call me schmuck a lot, which is just crazy.
It's a great word.
You
it is
know,
a great
like
word.
The,
and then
it's
she
a great
tap,
word.
And then she taps me. That's abuse.
Yeah, it's a tap.
I mean, we have to.
What's
I feel.
Up, you
I
schmuck?
Feel can't even talk. I can't even talk. My own
nobody,
podcast.
Nobody listen. Oh, it's
yeah.
I hate
it's
your
one of the few
podcast.
Times
yeah.
that you can't speak. It's incredible.
Yeah, usually they don't. Even
it's
if I do speak, nobody listens.
Should go down
that's
in
okay.
History.
Can I give you mine? I'm gonna just interrupt you.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you're on the Yang Gang. Backing the presidential candidate, Mr. Yang, but the one thing I'm actually like to take out of his campaign for tennis is actually the idea of the universal basic income. You've had the opportunity now to be on the real positive side on it. You've also been on the very negative side of it. Is there a way to potentially balance that and find
for
just
tennis?
A little bit, yeah, for tennis a little
yeah,
bit more.
Yeah, I mean,
a level
obviously.
Playing field.
So. it seems so simple of obviously the distribution needs to be to lower level.
Yeah.
Lower rounds, lower tournaments, that whole thing. But someone's got to fund it. And the people who want to fund it don't want the distribution to go like that.
Yeah.
So if you had people who were like, yeah, low, like if I hit the lottery, I would be like, yeah, qualifiers, first, second round, guess what, guys? You get the money. Like, I would be all for it. But these people who host these tournaments, they don't want the lower, like, they don't care about, want, like, I think for one of the WTA tournaments, the guy said, like, he wasn't impressed with the semifinals, whatever, the year before. So he's going to increase, like, finals and winners by like $1 million. Mm. Only those two.
Take it away from the semis.
Wow.
No. Oh. He was going to input an extra. It was, okay. You know.
Yeah. Right.
It was that kind of money, but he was like, I don't care about the rest. I want the big names to get motivated to win these tournaments, and that's something you can't. It's like, oh please, like please don't do that, right? You know, it's like money, they don't need the money, but you know, at this rate, that's the only real thing that can motivate top players that extra bit is even more money. And it's crazy because obviously it's not too different from countries as well, but like when the top have so much money, though, a little bit of money won't entice them. It's gotta be a lot.
Right.
So to like keep them appeased, it's just this like you just have to keep shoveling money to the top. And then if you don't, you know, we can say, oh well, let's put money towards the middle and bottom. Guess what, like the money at Slams is so good now that the top players don't have to play the WTA tournaments. They have absolutely no reason to. So what do we have to do? We have to create a bonus for the top players. Hey, if you basically invest in the WTA, then guess what? You get even more money. So the lower players are like, wait, but what about us? And it's like, guess what? If they play, that's better for you. So it's, in a way, that's a trickle-down effect, which sucks that you have to rely on it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's kind of like your hands are tied. Like, what else can... Unless you can find, again, like, Noah Rubin wins the lottery. Actually, you're probably not getting a cent if he wins that bit.
Can I just win for once, please? Please, any win, anytime, please.
Do you want to ask your question?
No, I mean, yeah. So we're towards the end of the podcast, and I know a lot of people, now that I'm speaking, are going to turn off the podcast. So I'll just go along anyway. Do you ever see men and women players working together? Is that ever going to come? Because there are a lot of times where we are told that ATP is so separate from WTA. Don't work with them. Don't talk with them. That's not what you're supposed to do. You look out for ATP.
Well, I can't speak on behalf of ATP players, but I'm pretty sure the WTA is very willing to...
Oh, the player is willing.
The player. I mean, okay. I know maybe perhaps some of the men are a bit more old-fashioned and, you know, anti... whatever, but you know, they're on their way out, hopefully. So I'm pretty, like, you know, obviously we want the whole, like, women, and but at the same time, like, we also understand that we're not trying to be, that the whole point of feminism is not to be better than men, it's just to be equal and to join forces. With the problem, you know, the fear is that if we were to work together, that the ATP would just kind of want to like manhandle it, the situation, and take literally. Full control. Yeah, literally, pun intended. And then you know, we don't want to put ourselves in a situation where we're not getting our fair share, that we're just riding on coattails, that we're just, you know, we should be thankful to even be a part of it. So if it were possible to be taken, if we were be able to be taken seriously and have our half of the say and bargain, then I mean, I'm pretty sure every player wouldn't be.
I just want to say I really enjoy the dynamic between the two of you quite a bit, mostly because nobody can see this beat, but Noah is like holding his hands together and he looks like he's literally shrunk. He's like literally shrinking into himself.
I wish you were there. We're at the end. I left, so it was Australia. I went to Hawaii and then went back to Australia. We're at the end of a month and a half trip.
Yeah.
I lost a piece of myself that couple of weeks. There's a piece of me still in Tasmania. So, and Christy has a lot to do with that.
It's like what are the Death Eaters in Harry Potter? I mean, they've just taken
sucked out some
of his soul.
No, but honestly, Christy's one of the few people that I can actually get along with and pushes me to the edge every once in a while.
I challenge him.
Yeah, I can tell.
In every sense, you know, to be better, to be worse, to be his best self, his worst self.
There's no lower, though. Which
no, I mean, no,
this is it. This is
rock bottom.
Welcome.
Can you really be at rock bottom at a slam, though? I mean, we are sitting at... Thank you for letting me be your physio for the week so that I could actually have access to this plush area.
You're taking care of my body. How ironic.
Everything is falling apart.
The world is upside down.
Trust me. Christy, thank you. Really appreciate it.
No, thanks, guys. That was fun.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoRubin33 and at MikeCTennis. We want to hear your opinions and stories behind the racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us ratings on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket on the Coffee Cast with Cation and Rubin.